You can proceed, sir.
Your Honor, may I place this here because of the focus with my glasses?
Sure. But if you could just use the microphone and tell us your name so we start.
So, good morning, Your Honor. Karim Salisi, plaintiff and appellant. And may I please the court by reading the points which I prepared from the papers? Yes?
Sure.
Thank you. Judgment defense counsel is presumed to have conceded to all my statements if he does not rebut any of them. After I speak, money judgment was not appealable nor subject to vacation according to all current statutes and case laws. Defense brief was not verified, was replete with perjuries, as were his trial documents. The case assignment for all purpose purpose process had been flawed, had been without formal, actual, or any notice to me, plaintiff and appellant, and that the trial judge, Crandall, never obtained jurisdiction of the case, and that he was timely challenged both peremptorily and for cause, and that my related writ should have been granted by this honorable court. All the trial court activities of counsel were fraudulent with an illegally fixed outcome, exactly as defendant had warned me in advance on the phone before he retained counsel in restoring to a specific lawyers who fixed cases. I request this court, this honorable court, to conduct its own material fact findings on all the issues related in my briefs, raised in my briefs. Based on the above, I hope that the court finds and declares that my following attorneys are liable for malpractice in my case in this order: Douglas Farrell, John Chakmak, Richard Knickerbocker. Based on above, also I hope that the court declares that I'm entitled to file malpractice actions against the above three attorneys and that statute of limitations have not run as to each of them, in spite of the fact that the related and corrupted federal case had ruled that I should not file any further lawsuits as to the subject property. That case had been corrupted by the former defendant, Judge William Monroe. Recent appellate decisions, which I filed with the court last week, fortify the related issues raised in my briefs. In addition to the specific differences between void and voidable judgments, thus supporting the fact that my money judgment was not void to be set aside in the way that it was wrongfully treated. CalDRE, California Department of Real Estate, has failed to act on my early 2017 broker's complaint against Orhan Tolu of San Mateo, the employer of defendant Peymani here, and the owner of the bogus judgment defendant Century Funding, and a number of other bogus entities currently. Waitam Martin, case with the citation WL6102022, a case on page 31 of my opening brief, is evidently not published, as I found out last night on Google. Does the normal court want to have a copy of these notes for reference?
No, we wouldn't take any documents at argument. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions, Your Honors?
I'm not seeing any. Okay. Any response?
Good morning, Justices. May it please the Court. I am Lawrence Jacobson, representing Respondent Peymani. We filed a motion to dismiss prior to appellant filing his opening brief. That motion was denied without prejudice to our filing a renewed motion after the filing of the of the opening brief. We did file a renewed motion. And my understanding is that that motion, renewed motion, would be considered in connection with the hearing on the merits on the appeal. I would invite your attention to the renewed motion and urge the court to grant that motion to dismiss. The motion to dismiss presents these basic issues. First, the judicial challenges that are referenced in the appeal are non-appealable. Secondly, the motion to set aside the dismissal of the case is itself non-appealable. The order setting aside the default that was entered in a minute order of March 11, 2016 became final. We served a form of order on March 14, 2016 containing the content of the minute order. So that order setting aside the default became final in May 2016. The judgment of dismissal and the order granting the demur were entered on August 1st. We served the notice of entry of the order sustaining demur without leave to amend and the judgment of dismissal on August 4. Accordingly, the order dismissal and the judgment of dismissal the order sustaining demur and the judgment of dismissal became final on September 7. The appellant filed a motion styled as a motion to set aside the dismissal. It was filed in the first week of August. It was not styled as a motion for a new trial. That motion does not conform to the requirements for a motion for a new trial and not be considered to be a motion for a new trial that would toll the time. Nonetheless, if you gave that motion to set aside, the benefit of being some form of motion for a new trial that would toll, that motion as a motion for a new trial would be denied by operation of law upon the expiration of 60 days after the notice unless decided. So that motion was denied by operation of law.
But wasn't that motion really brought under CCP 473?
I believe it was, but that would not affect a tolling. So the only way you get to this tolling consideration.
The question is whether the denial of that motion is itself appealable. A motion brought under 473, denying the motion under 473, I think, is normally appealable, is it not?
Well, if it was, it was not appealed. It was not, certainly not appealed within the time for doing so. I'm just trying to give the benefit of the doubt here to any tolling effect. And so if you did give it that benefit, it would extend you out to October 3rd, but the notice of appeal was not filed until December 19th. Even though there was no requirement for a formal order on the motion to set aside, the court did enter a formal order, and the court served the minute order on November 2nd. So the 30 days after that would have expired December
1st. Well, the first. Isn't the point, though, if the order setting or denying the motion to set aside the dismissal is itself appealable, then there are 60 days to run after that.
And that expired with no appeal.
you're saying that the appellant here did not appeal from the denial of the motion to set aside the dismissal?
He did not file an appeal until December 19th, is my point in terms of timing.
Well, that was less than 60 days after the clerk served the notice.
There's only a 30-day period for that tolling.
It's not tolling. It's a question of whether the appeal is timely taken from the order that's being appealed.
Well, the appellant has argued that
there are two separate issues here. We have the judgment of dismissal, and then we have the order denying the motion to set aside the dismissal. And it appears to me, at least, that the notice of appeal is untimely as to the judgment, but timely as to the denial of the motion to set aside.
I think I'm understanding your point as you express it again. The appellant has declared his motion to have been a motion for a new trial. That's the characterization that he requested that the court attribute to it. But as long as the judgment was not timely appealed, the appealability of an interim order would be moot because the judgment would still stand.
All right, that may well be.
Okay. Those are my comments with respect to the renewed motion to dismiss. With respect to any substantive argument, there was no discussion in the opening argument here regarding any issues or error of law, and no issues or errors of law were stated in the opening brief. The opening brief at page 19 referred to page 943 of the clerk's transcript as containing the list of issues presented on appeal, but that page is simply one of the pages of the designation of the record, and it simply lists the names of motions. The corollary is that there is no factual or legal analysis with respect to any claim of error presented to this court for its reviewing function. Rather, nothing has changed in this case since this court rendered its opinion in G038002 some time ago. It's the same third amended complaint, and the lawsuit is still about the appellant's views of society and politics and the judicial system. The briefs that have been presented to you here with respect to this appeal still recount the contentions about World Savings operating a drug cartel and Alan Greenspan counterfeiting.
We're familiar with the briefs. We read them.
So my point is that that's all that the appellant has brought to this appeal is the same social commentary, and he's not presented any legal issue for analysis. With respect to the he only has two new matters. One is he's urging you to vacate the opinion that I referenced and to allow the case to proceed against all of the other defendants as to whom orders are final. And he's asking you to allow him to bring in new parties and apparently to authorize him to file actions against former lawyers. That's not a part of the court's function on this appeal, and it doesn't pertain to Mr. Paimani. With respect to the cases that he cited and to which he referred, there is a distinction with respect to this element of void. The cases are universal in the holding that if there is no service of summons and complaint, any resulting order is void. The court never has the power to enter orders with respect to persons over whom it doesn't have jurisdiction. In the case of OC Interior Services that was cited, is a Fourth District case that contains precisely that statement. Quote, accordingly, a default judgment entered against a defendant who was not served with a summons in the manner prescribed by statute is void, whether the lack of jurisdiction appears on the face of the judgment roll or is shown by extrinsic evidence. For a judgment that appears valid on its face, in either case, the judgment is, for all purposes, a nullity, past, present, and future. That is consistent with the trial court's order. In view of the limited opening argument, I would have no further response.
All right. Any reply, sir?
Yes, Your Honor. Once again, with respect to the statements Mr. Jacobson made regarding the non-appealability and so on, the Honorable Justice properly responded, and that's exactly the case. It was the appealability of the motion to set aside plus the judgment itself, because they both merge into each other. And these had been asked and answered.
That's not exactly what I said, just so you understand.
Okay. I understood what he said, but I'm just enhancing my statements. And then the fact that I've gone through all the iterations of these deadlines and so on in the opening brief and a reply brief, and also my writ, which the court previously denied without considering it. And then the other matters the defendant counsel expresses are basically false. For instance, the August orders and so on, they had not been filed. As I've documented there, he had worked it out with the clerk of Judge Crandall, a lady by the name of Miss Quach. He had worked it out with her. He had conspired with her to have it signed and filed in order to cut out and then fix the court papers in order to afterwards come out and claim this. So this, which goes back exactly to what defendant had told me before he hired Ms. Jacobson, that his boss, Orhento Liu, uses a specific group of lawyers who only fix cases, and he's going to have to resort to the same people. He didn't even know who it was going to be until he resorted to Mr. Jacobson. And this is exactly what happened, as I've documented with all the numbers and so on. And the appealability of judicial challenges, as I've also documented, it is appealable according to this court's own case law, which I've cited. It's appealable upon the final judgment of the case. And if there's any more questions.
I'm not seeing any. And then the matter is submitted, and we'll take a brief recess for another panel change.
Thank you.